Of Our Strange Country, Banquet of Choices, Volume 1 of 2, by Ariel Hunter. Prologue, Chasing the Dragon, Berkeley, California, 1968. Picture the time, picture the place. Picture a gaunt young man sitting by a fire on a threadbare Turkish rug spread over a hardwood floor, wearing loose paisley pants in crimson and saffron, tied at the waist with a woman's scarf. Now picture a small boy, naked, nearby, playing a silent game. Rain crawling down the window pane melts away the ashen clouds. Cedar smolders in the fireplace, and incense burns in a brass pot, filling the room with a scent of woodland and spice. Peace signs and daisies balance on a mobile hanging from the ceiling. And in a photograph on the mantel, two young soldiers in jungle fatigues pose in front of a moss-laden temple. Nouveau lithographs and psychedelic posters watch from the wall, and the room is awash in a liqueur from the spirit world so thick it could be poured out and served for guests. But there are none, only the young man and his child. A bottle of wine sparkles in the firelight. The young man empties the bottle into a glass. Swirling the blood-red liquid, he tips the glass and drinks, then picks up a pencil and paper and begins writing. A violet sky standing in exile. Tapping the pencil on his forehead, he crosses out what he just wrote and begins again. A violent sky stands in exile. Souls twist in time like a witness tree. Young men smoke carnelian dreams, and the old again begin to sing of a far strange country. He starts a record spinning on a turntable, then sits down. A haunting guitar resonates in the room, and a lone voice follows. Taking a match from a brass box, he lights a candle. A wisp of sulfurous smoke trails away, replaced by the flame. The candlelight illuminates a smudged outline of black coal surrounding his eyes. His pale skin is almost translucent in the glow. A long strand of tangled dark hair falls from a crooked part in the center of his forehead, but he takes no notice. He's slave to another master. He picks up a piece of aluminum foil and pinches it into a shape resembling a tiny Chinese sampan, the way he learned in a hovel on the edge of Da Nang. And into the aluminum sampan, he empties a packet of unrefined brown crystal. Heroin, the blood of the poppy, scraped away by a knife that turns and cuts the poppy again. Leaning forward, he holds the little boat over the candle. As the heroin warms, it turns into a muddy liquid. Small droplets race inside the tiny craft and vaporizes into smoke. Following the swirling smoke with a straw, he inhales, rocking the boat back and forth over a candle. The hot, resinous smoke burns his throat, then his lungs. Chasing the dragon, they call it. He sits motionless, waiting. Then, trapped in a momentary eternity of blinding awareness, he remembers drinking the last of the wine. He grabs the pencil and writes, "Too late, I ride the dragon." In slow motion, his eyes roll back. He sits suspended for a moment before succumbing to gravity's relentless pull. His head drops to one side and draws him crashing to the floor. The little boy scrambles to his father's side and shakes him. "Daddy?" No response. "Daddy, wake up." Nothing. The boy begins to cry and cries until there are no more tears. Then the exhausted child falls asleep in the hollow between his father's knees and chest. The arm of the turntable spins into the center, filling the room with rhythmic static. Daylight wanes. The fire burns itself out. Cold creeps into the room, and the candle melts into a pool of wax, swallowing the tiny aluminum sampan and the vicious, vaporous dragon the young man unleashed. In those days, there was no king. So every man did what was right in his own sight.